Hello and welcome to Salesforce Trails and Trials, where two Salesforce architects and special guests share their wins and woes so that you can learn with us.
Well, Happy New Year, Eric. It's great to see you.
Happy New Year. Great to see you too.
You know, Happy New Year is just something I like to say, certainly the whole month of January, but I like to just take it in, you know, through the first quarter, you know? It's always very happy.
Yeah, I do that with birthdays. It's also, I'm going to do it in February too, because our fiscal year end was January 31st. So I just keep wishing people Happy New Year because it's new fiscal new year, which if you're in sales, it's like a relaxing period of time because it's a whole new year from a work perspective.
So, yeah, and it's all this new potential, you know, new budgets. It's like you get a whole rack of money to go after as a salesperson. So new things to offer people.
That's true. New teams, new projects, new accounts, newness.
Yeah. Well, very nice. It's great to be with all of you. And we've loved seeing the podcast grow over the last 6 months. And so we encourage you to share with your friends. Please like and subscribe. Eric and I are just, you know, we're just enjoying the ride, and we don't have any big goals other than to put really valuable information in front of you. This year, we're lining up some great interviews with people to bring some more of that information and perspective, and just some of those unique, you know, kind of tales from the trail, right? The trials, and just bring together some of that, those challenging things as well as those wins to help us all continue to get better and just enjoy the ride together.
Yeah. Awesome. I was talking to my brother about, we've talked about Luck surface area.
Yeah.
This is from a podcaster, Texing is the name of the podcast. And this guy coined this term Luck surface area, where if you can increase the surface area of what you do and what people know you do, you'll have more luck. And I said, you know, you get there just by being helpful. Just keep learning, keep being helpful. And so here's what we're doing. We keep learning. We keep sharing it here on this podcast. And, you know, stump us, call our hotline. Do we still have a hotline?
We still have the hotline. Yeah, it's on the website now. We'll have it up here. I forgot the number. I'll find it. But yeah, it's nobody's called it yet, but we're looking forward to it. And the Luck surface area, that's texting out of Pasadena. I love it. It's the do and the tell, right? So that's do great things and then tell of those great things. And the more you do each, it grows that surface area. So a great noteworthy endeavor for us and for everyone.
So what have you been doing? What are you excited about?
Well, you know, I think the coolest thing I learned of late is a couple of novel ways to use Lightning Web Components. You know, and I've really been, anybody who's taken the, you know, kind of platform developer one, you got to get into a little bit of Visual Force, a little bit of Lightning Components. Certainly developers already know this, but I want to make this accessible for the, you know, the architects, the admins, that it's very accessible. And a couple novel things that we've done lately, which is one, you can create a Lightning Web Component that renders, you know, a nice view in Salesforce, and you can quickly turn that into a PDF that looks the same way. It's really nice.
Web component into a PDF?
Into a PDF, yes. So when you want to have that list that you put together of the packing list, for example, or whatever it might be, from your Lightning Web Component, you can turn it into a PDF that just gets downloaded. So much easier than having to do that in Visual Force.
Exactly. So you used to have this feature in Visual Force where you could just use a tag that said render as PDF or something like that, but that wasn't supported in Lightning. Are you saying there's now a button? Or what, can you take any PDF and, I mean, any Lightning Web Component and make it a PDF?
My understanding is that you can, we have, you know, we had some relatively simple examples. Like I said, they're like a packing list and things like that you render it as a Lightning Web Component. And then you have I'm not sure if it's there's a button action that you can take that takes that rendering and downloads it as a PDF.
Perfect.
It's great.
Awesome.
And the second one that's related to it is that I've not had to interface with a scanner, like a handheld scanner. So a lot of times there's installable applications, maybe a little tray application on your Windows machine, and you scan and it does kind of, you know, it scans a number, automatically advances to the next field, automatically advances to the next form. There's lots of things going on with that scanning so that you can be away from the monitor and just be like walking around, beep, 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 and the forms are automatically moving forward. And so someone asked us to replace their access application that they had homegrown and built up that had both field advancing and form advancing. And so we found a way to do that in using Lightning Web Components. So we were able to kind of design a little JavaScript, add a custom kind of trailing character to indicate when it's going to be moved forward. And it just worked like a charm. And they were so delighted because the cost of doing it as a Lightning Web Component in Salesforce compared to what they did in that Access database was a fraction. And so I thought that was a great, because we migrated all that data over and now they just use it inside Salesforce away from the screen. It just kind of runs itself away from the screen and then it routes into Flow and does a bunch of stuff once they get back to the screen. So it's a really elegant solution with Lightning Web Components. So very excited about that learning.
That's so cool. That's come up a couple of times, that need to scan something and then minimize the amount of keyboard input afterwards to advance. And so I had a, I can't remember what it was. One of them was, I had a car company I was working with that wanted to GPS track their cars in shipment. And we had to associate a GPS tracker to the car because they were going to buy this third-party GPS widget to just put in the car. And that's one where we added scanning. And then the other one, just in our own mailroom, in our office building, we use Salesforce for tracking packages that get shipped to you there in the before times. And everything is just, you know, scanner based. And they just look you up. They look up the package ID. They find it. They find out what shelf is on and they can go get it. And that's just another example of it. It's just a form. Just because it's Salesforce doesn't mean it's weird.
Exactly.
You know, just take the form. You can use JavaScript and when it's populated, just move it forward. And
Well, that's a key there, right? Because a standard kind of, record page, you can't auto advance. You can tell it what direction you want it to go when you push tab. Right. But you can't auto advance.
Right.
And then flow does not yet enable you to push in JavaScript to kind of add custom on click, on blur, you know, kind of on change events onto the fields themselves. And so you have to go to a Lightning Web Component. Now, potentially we could have done a Lightning Web Component on top of a flow. We didn't really explore that because it's a single page app in, you know, on the LWC side. But it really did, you know, it added a secure way to have that field level control over those events, which was really nice.
Cool. That's pretty cool. New custom stuff.
New custom stuff. Yeah. And very accessible. That's why I want to encourage, you know, architects and admins to look into that because, you know, when you start up a new Lightning Web Component bundle, it creates all the files for you in like this really basic format using the Lightning design system. You can copy paste your UI in there and the variable formats are very simple. So building an LWC is actually not that complicated is with what Salesforce already gives you. So it's a nice way to kind of enter into the programmatic side and just cover that, you know, 5 to 10% that really makes an app unique, something like printing or downloading as a PDF or having a scanner be the input device.
Yeah, super cool. That's a good one. I think on mine, I stumbled across one, you know, one of the other podcasts I listened to was talking about to a product manager about things that are cool that are coming. And one of the pilot features that's out now is something called Dataweave in Apex. And I'd heard Dataweave before, only because I'm in Salesforce. And if you happen to be a MuleSoft customer, Dataweave is their data transformation language. So if you want to take inputs from one API, mash it up, transform it, you know, split it apart, merge it, whatever. You use the scripting language called Dataweave. And I've had the occasion a couple of times to, for demonstration purposes, have to load up an Excel file in Salesforce from, you know, ask the user to upload an attachment. When the attachment lands in Salesforce, open it in Apex, process it, pull out the data, put a bunch of records in Salesforce. But I made no attempt to do transformation because Apex.
Yeah, not fun.
Have any transformation capabilities, anything string related. But Dataweave is the ability to use this transformation language in Apex. And right now in the pilot, it's super new. It just outputs as a string. So you got to go take the string and do something with it. But you don't have to buy MuleSoft to get Dataweave. So this is a cool cross-cloud technology improvement where we took, you know, what MuleSoft knew how to do And I'm going to guess we made some kind of grammar parser. I don't know. We added the ability to use that language or that capability in Apex. And so going forward, maybe in prepping a PDF file or, you know, who knows what you might use it for. You can use Dataweave to, you know, maybe transform tables or who knows what you do.
That's pretty sweet. Now, there's a little bit of a license on that, right? So it's probably a kind of a select group that like MuleSoft customers, I think you were mentioning.
No, there's no license required.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's just part of Apex now. The ability to use Dataweave in Apex.
Sweet. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Definitely something to explore because it's a really common, I mean, in my world, that's usually immediately like an ETL tool of some kind, you know, Jitterbit or otherwise, just because Apex has been so poor with it. Yep. So the idea of creating your own input, you know, like marketing wants to input or import a bunch of items and being able to import that and do the transformation and all of that on Salesforce is really interesting.
Yeah. It's a tangent here. Apex has always been like Java. It was forked. I say forked, but, you know, inspired intensely by Java around 2007. But the thing it never had was the ability to add libraries. You can't add your parsing library. You can't add a string library. You can't add a string parsing library or image processing or things like that. So Dataweave is a cool native way to do that. And then the tangent is Salesforce Functions is something I've been talking to people about too. There is an additional cost if you want to use Salesforce Functions, but you can run Java and you could do all your image processing, watermarking maybe on a document, or maybe use your own libraries for anything using functions. It's cool that it's part of Apex and you don't have to worry about it.
That is cool. Yeah, there's so much to explore with functions and having that kind of, you know, a little AWS listener that does something for you and just sends it back.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, good stuff. Definitely some things for me to look into as well. So let's talk about one thing that could have big consequences. And we're taking a little bit of a different angle here in that we've historically talked about some simple change you can make in the configuration, like, you know, deleting a field or something. And now we're going to talk a little bit about maybe one small thing of having a dev first perspective. There's many people who come from the LAMP stack, or they come from, you know, maybe a Windows development background. And as they think about solutioning or solving something, they think about code. And this is how you do it. And they love that kind of pixel perfect control and, you know, kind of being able to understand, you know, soup to nuts. Let's talk about some potential challenges with that perspective.
So the upside of dev first is that, so let's say you're Lightning Web Component example you talked about earlier for scanners. There's not a good way to build that with configuration in Salesforce. And even the multi-screen capability, the wizard capability, if you want to auto advance, flows might not be the way to do it. We have to look into that. But native flows with no Lightning Web Components probably can't do it. But what's amazing with dev first is you're just using Salesforce as a platform. Salesforce manages authentication. Salesforce manages your record access through profiles. And then you can build anything you want with any UI you want. So that's really cool. And the other thing that's cool is a lot of the dev ops motions that you'll be used to are pretty straightforward, and you can push whatever you want to production. You know, unlike there are some config aspects of Salesforce that to this day still don't have metadata coverage. And I'm just going to guess one is list views. There's others. Am I right on that one?
You can send list views with the custom.
Oh, you can?
Okay. Yeah, you can. But there are definitely, like, especially things around, for example, digital engagement, some aspects around communities.
Right.
You know, there's aspects, for example, high velocity sales. You can't create elements using the metadata API. Now, caveat, Salesforce did send out a survey late last year saying we know we are falling short on the custom metadata API, on the metadata API in general. Please tell us what are your highest priorities for the MD API. And so hopefully they're going to be coming around to that. But this is just a reality that it's constantly catching up.
It's always trailing. We're pretty good at publishing our APIs, but there's always stuff that is trailing. So if you stay away from configuration, you don't find many situations where you can't push your code to production with a script. So that's really cool. But the thing that, as somebody who lives inside Salesforce and has seen people do things custom in the past, I had a customer who built a custom UI on top of opportunities because they really didn't like the yellow color of the default opportunity shading, but they wanted to be green. And they want to be three columns wide and not two columns wide because they were came over from SalesLogix. And SalesLogix had three columns wide. So is that an old, does anybody make SalesLogix anymore? I don't know. And so they customized the UI. And once you customize the UI with code, you can't configure anything anymore unless you designed your Lightning Web Components to be.
Yeah, with field sets or whatever it might be. Yeah.
So you get stuck now where all the goodness that the salespeople at Salesforce told you was so great about Salesforce. So flexibility, you know, maybe aspects of upgradability if you get into custom UI libraries, things like that. Suddenly, like, you're back where you started before Salesforce. You're not more productive. You're not more agile. And so this, I have a customer where one group or two groups do a lot of code and the developers are happy and they can solve all their problems. And then I have other customers who are very admin focused and config focused. And the biggest thing that gets me about just because you have programmers, should you code everything? I mean, this is Salesforce. Salesforce does have benefits that are beyond providing you with a JavaScript API. I think my concern would be that you may be going down the path of coding without concern for low cost maintainability in the future. That's my biggest objection to, like, don't code the whole thing. You could, it's actually works great. It's fast. But I think there's a downside. Is it just me? Do you feel that way?
Well, I think the aspects I agree with what you have spoken about, I think doing all of that and increasing the scope of that perspective starts to get tough to do under 2 megabytes of code over time.
You're also limited in your Apex code by the 2 megabyte. We depend on our customers' unit.
Yes, the hammer process for every release.
Performance test and proof test, like our upgrades to make sure they're good. And so when you assert that something will be true, we assume you're doing a good job so that if we break something, we'll find it. But if you're submitting code into production and it's poorly unit tested, but you've got your 75% code coverage, that will become apparent when product management goes in and tries to help you expand your 2 megabyte limit.
Yes. So we speak on an earlier episode about the importance of good test code, not only for your own work and future, you know, kind of the longevity of that code, but helping Salesforce eliminate bugs on your behalf because of the hammer testing that's used against that test code for every release.
Yeah. It helps us understand the profile, what people are doing. So
I have more on the downside of that. And coming from me, I'm very people first in my orientation. So regardless of the ceiling that you might be able to increase to add more code, if you do good code coverage, I think there are many downsides to this. I think the total cost of ownership aspect that you spoke about is a key one, right? You're going to have to use the most in-demand, expensive resources, right, to engage this code and make updates. So on this topic, I think I have a lot more on the downside. So in addition to total cost of ownership, right, where you're using your most expensive resources to engage this, which are in very high demand, and their time, once you have them retained, are in immense demand because there's a lot of backlog. It also takes out the team from, or removes many members of the team from what I would consider the innovation and the prototyping process. So if they spin up their own sandbox and they want to say, you know what, I think there's another way we could do this. This is the beauty of Salesforce. Anybody can pick up Flow. Anybody can go configure a few fields. They can create an app. They can walk the team through a prototype often faster than they could draw up the Visio diagram describing the thing.
That's true.
And if you're using a custom UI and you're focused on code-based models, like, you eliminate all of that possibility because nobody's going to consider it because you just don't do that.
Yep.
Right. It's a non-starter.
So often I get caught at, you were talking about, you're taking away, like, there's some of your team that can't contribute. You're going to be using a slower approach to maybe do something super surgical. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, I think one of my lessons when I was back at Accenture, when I was in IT consulting before this, was everything is possible for a cost. That's one lesson. The other is there is an appropriate solution for the context of the time. What's your budget? What's your time frame? What, you know, what level of error is allowed? There's a two or three other factors too. The point though is that a computer scientist will come out and go like, okay, I need a cool architecture. I need a, you know, I need Kafka on the back end, and I need event-based architecture, and I need, you know, whatever. I'm going to use the latest Vue libraries, and we're going to do something else that's going to be responsive on the phone. And you can do all that if you have the time. But my argument after years of using Salesforce, after years of customizing Salesforce for demos, is there's this balance at around 90% of requirements. At about 90% of attaining the requirements, you get your ROI. And the last 10% of your requirements are, I'm going to guess, optional, but nice to have. And they're the expensive part. If you remember getting an A in school, mm-hmm. it was easier to get an A minus than to get an A plus, or a B plus than an A plus. That last 10% is super expensive. Mm-hmm. And the same is true with developing software. You can get an app together on Salesforce with tables, with security, with mobile, with processes, with screens, with configuration. It's not the best UI. It's pretty good. And things are getting better.
It's not the best. Yeah. For every circumstance.
It's not the UI that your UI designer would have designed from scratch.
Sure.
And so anytime you go down that route of talking to UI designer first and then Salesforce, you hit this problem of like, well, how do I go back to the UI designer now and say like Salesforce doesn't do tabbing that way?
Yeah. And it's the blank canvas conundrum. Yeah.
Right. So you can build everything custom on Salesforce, but, or you can get exactly the UI you want on Salesforce. But is it worth it?
That's the key.
Trade-offs?
Yes.
And to me, like a business app, not worth it. A customer-facing app where brand is super important, okay, invest. That's your product. Put your effort into it. But what are my salespeople using? What are my customer support people using? Are you really going to out-ticket or knowledge base your competitors by inventing your own UI when your dev team does not come from a customer service app design background, and this is your first version? Mm-hmm. Like the Salesforce team sits and we look at what people do, what their behaviors are in the app, and then we tweak it. Like we've been doing this for 20 years. So whenever people, I have customers who are like, nah, it's really a key feature for us to build our own UI and our infrastructure for our call center. I know you are wealthy enough to build whatever you want, and you can technically build whatever you want because you have the people, but should you?
No, it's a really good point. I just think there's a lot of downsides, and you know, you lose out on a bunch and the complexity goes way up. And when you're going to invest here, even if you could, it means you're not going to invest somewhere else. And often in environments like that, what I find is that a pile of effort resources are put into this pretty thing. And then there's a host of just drought on all these other areas, which actually has a much bigger impact to the team. But since they're not developers, that they don't get any attention to those matters. So to me, it's like it's a disproportionate focus. That I think you bring up a great point, right? Which is we got to ask if the juice is worth the squeeze.
Yeah. And I mean, as a consultant, that means you're happy to do whatever your customer wants to some extent. At some point, like you're happy to code something for them, but
we wouldn't code everything for them.
You know, Salesforce, and you know, like that would be silly in some situations.
Well, and an additional element too, like we would decline. We would say, you know what, that might be quite valuable, but we're not the right partner for you. Mm. I think the other aspect too is when people pay for their Salesforce license, people buy Salesforce because it's the best, not because it's the cheapest. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people out there who have cheaper options, but they're not the best. Yeah. And nobody uses Salesforce out of the box. They use it because they can customize it. Now mm-hmm. you can do that too much, like what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. One of the downfalls of this as well is Salesforce has agreed to essentially be in the software business for you. When it comes to Flow, like they're going to pay for the R&D and the innovations on Flow. And how amazing has that been over the last 3 years?
Yeah, it's really gotten good.
So if I do all that in Apex myself and I script everything, well then none of those innovations mean anything to me.
Right.
And so my LAMP stack hosted on DreamHost is so much cheaper than going to Salesforce and using it like it's a co-located server.
Yes.
Or our cloud instance at Blue Ocean.
If you're going to write the code, that's what I said before. We've had competitive situations where we go up against, you know, some platform or some solution or a built-in house. And we would have to do a ton of custom coding ourselves to do whatever they want to do. And when you compare for the customer, what benefits does Salesforce bring? Oh, this is what it is. People want to use Salesforce for the back end, but they don't want to use Salesforce for the UI. They want to treat us like a microservice, which is not what you can do with Salesforce. And I say, well, once you do that, you're basically losing all the benefits of using Salesforce.
Mm-hmm.
Because why? Like, the whole point is you can customize the back end and the front end adapts and it already mm-hmm. is connected.
And sometimes it's largely automatic. Yes.
It's automatic. If you're going to go build your own UI on top of Salesforce, then just do the whole thing. Like, don't go use Salesforce as the back end in general. I mean,
Exactly. Like, go to Heroku.
Also connects to service. Yeah, there are situations where you would do both, but in general, like call center where Salesforce is the back end, but you build your own front end, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, and I hope there's some, you know, program managers, executives who are listening to these podcasts, and sometimes it's intimidating because maybe you're not a technical person, you know, maybe you don't know the ins and outs of code. And so it's hard to push back on those arguments when the developer executive, when the founder comes to the table and says, hey, I want it to be pixel perfect. This is super important to us.
Yeah.
Hopefully some of these arguments that are really non-technical in nature, the idea of enabling bottom-up engagement and innovation in your business, that's a cultural win for the business, mm-hmm. nothing to do with technology, just making it accessible to your team. The idea of not having to pay for software in the sense that like that doesn't get upgraded, right? Software is upgrading software for you on a regular basis, and you're not going to be able to take advantage of that. That hollows out or undercuts the whole argument for why Salesforce licenses should be purchased. It's much less expensive to just go to a co-location platform or a cloud like DigitalOcean or whatever. They're not a sponsor, by the way, but we'd love to have them. So I agree with you. And I think it's something that it's something I look for when I'm recruiting is I look for people who have a developer mindset, who can think abstractly and can imagine and evaluate different ways to solve the same problem. Cause that's definitely true on Salesforce, but they can do so with their own custom tools and the given feature tools that Salesforce gives us, like Flow, like external services, right? Like Data Weave, these services, in addition to Lightning Web Components and Apex, they all work together and dovetail. That to me is the most powerful technical resource related to Salesforce because they're not over-engineering. It's very difficult and a big lift to take some of those ported solutions or over-engineered solutions and bring them up to the next modern path of Salesforce.
Yeah.
Very challenging.
One of the reasons, so going back to like, should you code? How much code is too much? Some code's great. Please do code, make them Lightning Web Components, make your components parameterized so you can actually, or message enabled, so you can pass messages between the UI and your web components.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you can drop them in and they can talk to each other. Those are newer features. So there are ways to do that. Elon Musk, through the pandemic, what I've been watching is a lot of YouTube. And I watched a couple on Elon Musk walking around his launch facility in Texas. And he had some kind of fan YouTuber who was there and who was getting Elon to talk about all the rockets and interesting facts and things like that. Have you seen these at all?
I have not. Sounds fascinating. We'll link to them
in
the show notes.
An hour long.
Okay.
And one of the things that Elon said, he was talking about on the booster rockets, there are these sort of wings that pop out to the side that have a grill of holes on them that helps steer the booster rocket.
They stabilize it on the way back, right?
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Yeah, there's maybe stabilizers. And they twist to help, you know, twist things around. Yeah, you know, that makes me think about, when you talk about optimization, there's something that comes to mind about focusing. I'm totally with you in that you got to leverage the platform. It is a platform. You're supposed to build on top of it, but you're also supposed to not worry about the parts that are underneath. And then there's an element also I see with some customers about, or, you know, admins, developers, they customize UI. And maybe it's because, you know, business puts pressure. on admins. I want it like this, make it so. And that could be the half of the reason why this happens, but over optimization of the UI is the topic I want to talk about. And it reminds me about this YouTube video. I watched a lot of YouTube during the pandemic. And one of the things I found was this guy who's an Elon Musk fanboy. And he actually got invited onto the launch pad in Texas and got a tour with Elon Musk around the facility. And Elon, excitedly, as he always does, talked about one of the most important things that engineers need to learn is to not optimize too early in the process. And I don't know this theory. Have you ever heard a theory about when to optimize? There's something about, you know, you do your design phase, you prototype, you refine, you prototype, refine, and then you go to production. But there is an element of importance, like not every refinement has to happen early. And I don't know what the full logic is. There's some kind of master's in industrial design that probably covers the topic. It could be a 101 class too as well, introductory. But the idea is you shouldn't optimize something before you actually know it's working and it can have the impact. Every optimization has a certain amount of impact on your performance. And if it's going to only have 0.5% improvement, don't you waste your time on that until you fix the other problems that affect 10% or 15 or 20% of the performance of whatever you're designing, your app, let's say. And so in an app, you need the data model right. You need the logic right. The UI is the last thing you should worry about. And then once you build the UI, fine tune it, but leverage what's out of the box where you can with Salesforce. Because it does so much, it's responsive. It works on mobile, like the mobile app and in CRM. And a lot of people I work with already know Vue or they would know React or they know something else. And they want to bring that into Salesforce. And that doesn't really work that well because we are already an app server and React needs an app server. So you're loading an app server on top of an app server when you do that. So it's a complicated thing when you optimize the UI. And my question is, or my submission to you is, how much benefit is UI optimization going to make to you above and beyond the Lightning design system in its current version today? It's not the best, but it's not bad.
For sure.
That's my point. When do you optimize that? And do you need to optimize
that? It's a really good point. I think one thing that just came to mind is this idea of the developer exercising or the program manager, or somebody exercising leadership in avoiding what I call blank canvas paradox. Like the blank canvas paradox is where if you don't narrate the visual conversation to your team, to your organization, then they have no choice but to go back to the blank canvas. And they're going to start with, oh, I like this on React. I like this over here on this WordPress template, or I like this over here, this painting on the wall. I mean, people don't necessarily know the boundaries of what's possible and what's not. And some people have a very pixel perfect kind of culture or affect about them that can be very, very difficult. I mean, we've seen this like in a Salesforce community. I'm like, oh, I love this. Wow, you spun this up in 2 days. That's awesome. That needs to be moved over 7 pixels. And until that's done, we're not going live.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. And so gleaning out that sensibility of being like, is this a pixel perfect model? Or are we really looking for business value and time to value being accelerated? Yeah. And then if so, great. Hey, here's the framework. We already have a design system. Let me walk you through some of the patterns. And these are great because we can start with these and we can customize them, but we're not starting from scratch. We do not want to start from blank canvas because we want to leverage the tools that are already delivered to us based on that subscription fee we already pay. If you start out that way, that is a real help and you avoid a lot of this trouble, but hoping for the best and then trying to mitigate blank canvas paradox from the inside when it's already happening is really, really challenging.
Totally. And I would say the same thing if I were talking about older systems. It's not just Salesforce. Any system, it has a framework. I'm going to say whatever, SAP, Siebel, there's probably Oracle frameworks, right? You know, ServiceNow, whatever it is. You probably have something already available and your sweet spot for productivity is in that space where you have not over-optimized and you're still getting value out of the app and you don't want things that confuse your users. I'm totally with you, but we're not winning an Oscar A Webby? What's the word?
A Tony?
This is not an art project. This is a functional tool that needs to get the job done. And we move on then to the next tool once the first one is working well enough. And you and it will come back for
And good enough is good enough.
Good enough is good enough. So like I love A plus work. It is beautiful. There shouldn't be bugs, but do you need all the whipped cream on top? I don't know. I think it's fluff.
No, that's a good point.
But
all right,
UI UX person.
Let's move on to what you're excited about. So what are you excited about these days?
I am excited about going back to my roots in computer science. So I did computer science in school. I wasn't a programmer in high school. I only found computer science maybe in my third or second year of college. And I learned to program. I did IT consulting for 6 years. I came to Salesforce and I've ended up on the more technical end of sales engineers because I have this technical background. But really, if I look at the truth, going back to college even, I'm a hacker. And I say hacker because I hack into things. I'm a hacker because I am not a scientist. I copy somebody else's work today. This is how I work. I go to GitHub. I find something like it. I copy it. I don't have to start from a blank canvas. I already understand what's going on and I can change things from there. But I'm a hacker. And so I've been mostly doing stuff in Apex in Salesforce for years. I did some JavaScript stuff in Salesforce a while back in 2006 or something like that in an early API that we offered that was JavaScript based. But then I hadn't touched it. And then we acquired Slack. And so you've heard me talk again and again and again about what I'm excited about. And it's Slack. Well, Slack, yes. But it turns out that while there are point and click aspects to creating Slack apps, there's also really the majority of the integrations you're going to want to make that are orchestrated are going to be done through code. And that requires Java, Node, PHP, Python, whatever. You have to write an app that listens to your Slack messages. What's exciting to me is like, I said, okay, well, I got my first app together in September on Slack, but I really hacked it together on Node. I didn't know what I was doing at all. I mean, really, I was hacking it together. It was ugly. It has never gone through a code review and I'd be embarrassed to do it. So my friend told me about there's a Udemy class, an online course at udemy.com on Node.js. And I saw it, and it was on sale for $16 and it's like 30 hours of instruction by this really smart kid who's like 25, 27. And kudos to him for putting together this class.
Another welcome sponsor.
Yeah, totally. And he is amazing. Udemy is awesome. He's amazing. And what is shocking to me is, wow, look at me. I'm sitting in my room. It's 25 years after college. And I'm on my couch, on Wi-Fi, on my laptop. And I'm streaming a college class, pretty much. And doing exercises on my laptop on how to create a weather station monitoring client on my laptop. That's maybe the second or third app. And the exercises took me back to college where I was learning to program. So my point is I'm buffing up some skills in a modern language that, you know, I learned C++ in 1994. And Java was just coming out then. And, but now the same concepts apply. We have object orientedness. We have, you know, member variables, member functions. JavaScript's got some funky function notation, but I'm learning all that. And it makes what I wrote in September makes a lot more sense now. But the cool thing is like, go check out Udemy and you will be wiser on whatever topic you study. And as we said before, you and I both like learning. And I'm filling in some gaps in what I don't know about JavaScript for the purpose of being a better Slack advisor to my customers. So that's what I'm into. What are you into?
Super cool. Man, I you bring back some memories for me back in my software developer days of JavaScript. And like, is it one equal sign or two equal sign?
Or
is
three.
It single quotes or double quotes?
Yes.
Right? And you're like, is it a backslash or a forward slash?
Backtick, forward tick.
Right? Exactly. I'm like, I always tell my, I remember I would code with my business partner across the table. We had one big piece of plywood he would sit towards the right side of that side and put his legs through. And I would put to the right side of this side and put our legs through. Uh-huh. So we'd have the same sheet of plywood as a table. Uh-huh. And one of the other partners rounded off the edges for us. It was like great startup material. But I would have a phrase that'd be like, if I had a nickel for every time I had that syntax error, you know, in JavaScript.
Yep. And as you say that, you know, well, anyway, it's so amazing that what I had to go to college for at the time, I could go to community college to learn a program at the time. I went to UC San Diego, but I had to go to college and take a programming class for 10 weeks to do, I don't know, maybe we did twice as much work, and I already know languages now at this point. So you can give me a new language and it's not that different, but it's amazing that in 30 hours, I can now know, you know, Node.
It's amazing. It's like you're in the Matrix and you're like, download node.js.
It's okay. Almost like a download. You got to carve off some time.
It's just over a modem. It's like a 28.8 modem. So it just takes 30 hours.
Totally.
But it's happening.
Yeah, it's coming. It's a download of sorts.
Well, I'm excited about a few things. And I think I'll combine our next segment into this one. So, you know, I'm excited that Trailhead DX. Now it's called Trailblazer DX. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I really enjoy that conference and the various people. Like, there's a lot of architects at that conference. I love kind of connecting and hope we get to do the solution outpost, you know, or our consulting outpost again. It's always a fun endeavor. So that's fun. And I'm looking forward to completing I've one cert left to complete my app and system architect credential, which is cool. I'm finding now there's more and more people who are, you know, getting at or beyond the 11 certifications. So I gotta stay to par. So I'm excited. That forces a lot of learning, which is great. And really, I'm excited about last year in 2021. We started, basically, I have a nonprofit called Founder Kids that focuses on helping foster kids become founder kids. And so we identified a few organizations that use Salesforce and we were able to give grants to them. And I went and just summed up, you know, end of year, just kind of checking like, oh, maybe we gave a couple thousand dollars away. And we ended up giving $30,000 in grants last year, which I'm super excited about. And, so cool. And so that just inspires me to think about, hey, what could we do this year? And I'm just stoked because, you know, their mission is advanced by using Salesforce in better ways and avoiding some of that blank canvas thinking and not over-engineering just by the fact that they're interacting with our team and we're able to kind of guide them along and give them confidence. And so they adopt the platform more. And it's a great partnership because Salesforce is giving them great value with those free licenses. And I love the fact that we're able to grant them some service time to be able to help them leverage it fully and really deliver on their mission.
Yeah, that's super cool. I have so many thoughts when you say that. Good for you on the community, you know, give back, the giving back that you're providing to your community in a monetary way and a time way. And it's something that I know that that foundation is so grateful for that. I mean, not everybody's walking by saying, hey, you know, I'm 30,000 into you for this year, you know, and that's a significant donor. That's awesome. So not to make you blush, but kudos to you. And may we all find something like that. In frankly, the way Salesforce looks at it, I could go hiking and clean up trails and that would be community contributions. I could clean up my local pickleball court. That would count. Do the lines need painting?
Yes, that would count. And even if you played a little bit and help someone, you know, learn, I mean, that would count too. You know,
that's community contributions. So anyway, that's a cool thing to be excited about.
All right, man. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. See you next time.
Talk soon. Bye.